Welcome in! Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Mike Breton. Go by SEC Mike, go on the Twitters. And there he is, our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, hope you had, you and the cousins, had a great 4th of July. How you been?
Hey, Mike, it's great to catch up with you. Hope you and your family had a great 4th of July as well. Hope all the cousins did too. The great news, Mike, we're not that far for some football. I mean, start looking at the calendar. Media days are coming up. We got the video game out. Pretty soon, teams will be reporting for fall practice, and we'll get this season underway. So, my friends, it is not that far away, and that is a great freaking feeling, isn't it?
It is. Shout out to Cousin Fao Ming. Same sentiments there, Stephen. It's almost time, fellas. Counting down the days. Hope we can get together before the season. Maybe collaborate in the downtime. Cheers. We appreciate you, Fao. Member for 6 months. What a cousin. What a cousin. Just like Cousin Sven here. So, Stephen, we got a lot to cover. Stephen wanted to, he's been having this idea in his back pocket for several weeks here. He's wanted to do some SEC trades. So we're going to get to that. Fun little idea. And then we've got Stephen's bowl projections. Those are always a hit. Everybody always agrees with you on that.
Just like the just what I needed, right? People still yell at me about the quarterback rankings. People are going to be yelling at me all offseason about the bowl projections, Mike. It's exactly what I needed, right?
Exactly. And we've also got a bold prediction here from Stephen. But before we get to that, speaking of quarterback rankings, a better quarterback rankings was just released, Stephen. Shout out me. But thoughts on this? Anybody that missed it? We did it on the, but technically, I guess it was a Sunday show. Shane and I got together over the 4th. And I got Sellers, number one, DJ Lagway, two, Garrett Nussmeier, three, Talen Green, four, John Mateer, five. And the rest don't really even matter. But what was your thoughts, first impressions here, Stephen? And I know you were probably chief among all the hate mail I've been getting from the Arch Manning fan club.
I have an anonymous account that I just send, you know, people that don't have Arch Manning, number one, a bunch of complaints. I think, you know, just to kind of go back to something you and I have talked about, which is I still think there's four quarterbacks in the SEC that are head and shoulders above everyone else. So one thing I would step back is just to applaud you for putting out something different that's not just the static list and not just agreeing with me or anybody else. So I like there's something different here. And I think what you kind of captured with these rankings is Mateer and Talen Green in the top five, two quarterbacks with a ton of upside, two quarterbacks that are also hard to rank. So I think you clearly have a ton of confidence in both those guys. I'm maybe a touch lower, but I see where you're going. You also have a lot of confidence in DJ Lagway being healthy. I'm still a little bit worried. Ask me after we get through SEC media days. But I think just outside of that, the thing that jumped out to me was how hard it is to rank the quarterbacks basically 5 and 6 through 12 in this conference. It is a deep year for quarterbacks, whether it's Marcel Reed, Austin Simmons, Ty Simpson. There's a ton of really quality quarterbacks in the middle to the kind of the back half of the league. So they may be 11th in the SEC, but they're probably like 20th in the country. I think the biggest disrespect, Arch Manning being 6th is one of it, Mike, but Diego Pavia at 12th. He's probably printed that out, and he's going to use that as motivation all year. You just cursed Cousin Shane's Vols, Mike.
Well, he's been running his mouth so much, I probably should have put him a lot higher because I look up to him in that regard. But, yeah, he's just such a tough one for me to peg, Stephen, because you put let's say Diego Pavia is on Tennessee's roster. Do you think he's very effective? I mean, he probably would be because he's so talented, but I just feel like he's in the perfect situation, perfect scheme. And I put it like this, and this may not be a perfect comparison, but, you know, Mike Leach had all these quarterbacks, right, that probably not the most talented, but we called them system quarterbacks, and they put up insane numbers. Diego Pavia, he seems like he's the perfect system quarterback for the system he's in. And that I'm not trying to, like, knock him for that, but I just think that he's almost like a unicorn. I don't know what to do with him because if you put him at Alabama, you put him at Florida, you put him at Georgia, I don't know if he'd be as successful as he is in this you know, kill zone offense.
No, I think that's a good point. And also, stats aren't necessarily everything when evaluating quarterbacks, like to your point that you have to have a good mix of talent, stats, system, production, kind of upside when you're weighing these each season. I was curious on the Pavia ranking. Are you thinking that he just hit his ceiling last year, or do you think that everybody else is just basically just getting better in the conference around him?
Yeah, great question. I just think this is a very, very, very underrated quarterback conference right now. And I think the stars are going to emerge this fall. And again, he's among them, certainly. But if Vanderbilt goes, say, 6-6, which I'm not guaranteeing they will or anything, or even worse than that, but I think we're going to kind of be writing him off as a one-year wonder. I don't know. They've just got to prove it to me. I mean, the over-under is 4.5, whatever that's worth. But let's say they go 5-7. I can't sit here and say, well, man, they got one of the best quarterbacks if they're losing more games than they're winning, you know. And I know it's not all on him, but I don't know. I guess I'm just not a big believer that they can kind of duplicate and improve upon last year, while I think a lot of these other programs are going to get significantly better quarterback play this fall.
I think the two things that worry me about Pavia is the later in the season, he was definitely injured, but it definitely felt like defense is also kind of caught up a little bit to what Vanderbilt is doing. Now, Vanderbilt can probably counter that by making some changes this offseason, but also the personnel around him. Like when you're changing four starters in the offensive line, maybe you don't have the game breakers at receiver or some of the other teams in the SEC. So I think Vanderbilt's going to get back to a bowl game. That I think between the defense and I think between Pavia doing enough, whether it's fair or not, like statistically, I think it might be kind of hard for him to just completely blow out last year's number. So in a ranking like this, that comes into effect. And also, do you really want him having almost 200 carries in the SEC again? You probably don't. You probably want Seth Alexander taking some, and you want to keep him healthy for that November stretch so Vanderbilt can make a bowl game. So I get it. I would have him a little bit higher, but I get the thinking behind this. And I said this earlier this offseason, Mike. I think this is the best conference for quarterbacks in college football. Top to bottom, you've got superstars like Sellers, Lagway, Manning, Nussmeier, and you've got that second tier that's really going to come in with Mateer, Stockton, Simmons, you name it. I love the quarterbacks in this conference this year.
Okay, I got to be honest with you, Steven. You were a lot nicer than I thought you'd be, considering I put Arch number 16. So I appreciate you holding back on me. Let's hope you don't hold back on this week's bold prediction from Mr. Steven Lassen. All right, Steven, what you got this week for your bold prediction?
I'm going to admit, Mike, this probably isn't like super duper bold, but there's a head coach. He's on the golf course right now. He just perked up because Cam Coleman, I'm going to take to lead the SEC in receiving touchdowns this year. He had 6 in his last 3 games last year. I think you can kind of see where this is going with Auburn, with hopefully getting a little bit better quarterback play, Eric Singleton virtually replacing Keandre Lambert-Smith. So I think Cam Coleman builds on last season. I know fans in the SEC know how good Cam Coleman is. I think fans nationally are about to find out just how good he is. And I think he leads the SEC in receiving touchdowns, and he makes a run at All-America honors.
Wow. Shout out to Cousin Emily in the comments. Big Auburn fan. She says, I hate Auburn. I don't hate Auburn. I hate the coach. But I know she'll appreciate that. Any concern, though, that, again, going back to that coach, I mean, he had Jarquez Hunter last year. And how often did he, for whatever reason, not run the football with clearly his best player? Any concern that, I know he likes his receivers there, but, I mean, what if he ices his best receiver out like he iced out his best running back?
He probably is staring at the unemployment line, right? I mean, Auburn will have a new coach in 2026. I mean, I think that the one this the concern that I would have about a prediction like this, and you know, I'm super duper into like college fantasy, so these kind of stats matter. You know, Eric Singleton's probably going to take a good chunk out of it. You got some other receivers at Auburn. It's going to be hard to kind of like get one receiver to kind of dominate the touchdowns. But I always think about like coming into a year, we just got done with 2024, like into 2025. What player could really blow up this year that guys like me and you inside fans know? And I think Cam Coleman is about to become a national superstar for Auburn. And that starts with kind of getting into that double digit category of touchdowns. No SEC receiver had more than 9 last year. I think Ryan Williams is a pretty strong contender. I also think Deion Burks is a pretty solid sleeper pick if you want to pick somebody to lead the SEC in receiving touchdowns. But loaded receiving core, quarterback questions. I know it's not super duper bold, but I like Cam Coleman to lead the SEC in receiving touchdowns.
All right. Hey, that's pretty bold. I like it, Steven. I also like a donation from cousin Brandon Riley. Gave us $2. What's your reaction to OUAD Joe Castiglione retiring? What's your thoughts, Steven? I mean, one of the best in the business. I wonder if this has got anything to do with not being wanting to be the guy that may have to fire Brent Venables. I'm not saying it is, but what was your immediate reaction to one of the best 80s in the country retiring?
Mike, I think that's kind of where my take started. What would be, it was surprising, I think, to see that. I think if you're an Oklahoma fan, I think it's easy to put, and certainly if you cover college football, Castiglione's one of the best athletic directors in college football. Like just from where he took over Oklahoma to where they are now, think about Bob Stoops, that transition, then the transition to the next coach. I won't mention his name so Oklahoma fans don't get too mad. And then now moving to the SEC, like all they've accomplished, winning national titles, moving to the SEC, one of the most successful tenures by an athletic director and, you know, in the sort of the modern era of college football. I think beyond that, you know, you do wonder a little bit, like what exactly is the job of an athletic director now for football, especially if more front offices keep getting hired, you know, with like Jim Nagy at Oklahoma, there's some others, like what exactly is, where is the lines of control going to be? Also, as we kind of move into this new era of college football where revenue sharing, what's going to come down the road, it is a good time to get out because you kind of have some closure on that front, but more is going to be coming with that. And then of course Brent Venables, I would think they have a replacement in place on the full-time level later this year, maybe even early next year. Does that buy Brent Venables more time? Does it hurt his case? I think that's going to be something we'll have to see how fast they can hire somebody. But also, and again, this goes back to Oklahoma's got a good front office in football that's been built out. So what does that mean if you do hire a new athletic director, and what kind of input would something like that have? I think it's going to be a really new dynamic we're going to have to see.
Yeah, and cousin JP is screaming in the comments, Steven. So this is kind of different to kind of wrap your head around, but so his contract, I guess, runs through June of 2028, and he's going to stay on as AD emeritus. I think is how you say that, but that is meaning that's basically you're getting a title, kind of like Nick Saban. He's got a title at Alabama, but he's not coaching there, right? So this probably has more to do with tenure, so that he can get payment for the rest of his life, because you need so many years to get tenure. That's how a lot of these that's how all these school systems work state by state. So they are hiring a new AD, and he's going to be in there, as my understanding is Joe Castiglione is staying on through this football season only, and then they are hiring an AD. So yeah, he can have that title, he can get his money, he deserves everything he's getting, but he will not be there 2026, 2027, or 2028 as the acting AD.
I also thought I read in the ESPN story that he is basically going to work on special projects for the university. Right. Like he's moving into that role, but he will not be in charge of like the athletic and football program. So yeah, I think that this is a pretty big change for Oklahoma, going from one of the best ADs in the country to unknowns. Now there's one SEC AD in particular, who's got experience at Oklahoma, who's definitely on their radar. I'm sure Mississippi State fans are probably a little bit worried about that. But this is a very, very attractive job for an athletic director. Oklahoma is a good program in the best conference for college football. You may have a chance to reshape the football program. So it's pretty desirable.
It is. You know what else? Apparently this show becoming a family member is pretty desirable as well, Stephen, because shout out Chance. He just became a member of the channel. Chance, welcome to the family.
Welcome to the family.
We appreciate you, buddy. All the support goes a long way to helping us get to media days and things like that. So we appreciate you. All right. Steven, so we got a lot to get to. I think we should do the bowl projections first, and then we'll get to the trades. How's that sound?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's make people mad, and then let's make everybody like excited about the potential trades, right?
All right, so these are Steven's bowl predictions, not mine, but made a little graphic here, so let's get into it. Steven, SEC bowl projections, preseason edition, four teams out of the conference, headed to the college football playoff, according to Steven, Texas, Georgia, LSU, and Alabama. Let me ask you a couple things on this, Steven. What's your confidence level that the SEC gets four teams into the college football playoff after getting just three last season?
Mike, I feel pretty confident for two reasons. And I think there's a good chance this will be five. If you ask me in August, I'm probably going to pick a fifth team. I want to see kind of how some of the offseason news at Florida and South Carolina shakes out at SEC Media Days. But I think from a team strength perspective, Texas, Georgia, LSU, Alabama, all national championship contenders in my mind. In fact, I think I'm probably a little bit too low on Alabama in my power rankings. I got them, you know, just outside the top five. I actually kind of like them maybe a little bit closer to the top five. But I think all those teams on paper, the strengths are there to get to the playoff and to potentially win the national championship. The other factor is what else is out there in college football, because you know, some of your top contenders are Clemson, Penn State, Ohio State. Don't think a Big 12 champion will be able to get in the conversation to win the national championship in Notre Dame. So the field, I think, this year in college football is way more wide open than it has been. I think every team in the top 8-9 has questions, but they all could win it all. So I think last year, given that the SEC only got three, I think this year with the strengths that these teams have, what's going on in the other conferences, and also quarterback play, to go back to something you and I talked about, I think all four of these teams will have good quarterback play, and that'll sort of elevate some of these teams from that 9-3 to that 10-2 range where you need to be.
Maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, though, what, 1 being low, 10 being high, what's your confidence, if at all, that the SEC, because I think you've said this, I think this might have been your bold prediction, that the SEC can get a fifth team into the playoffs. So scale to 1 to 10, again, 1 being low, 10 being high. What number, what confidence level would you give the SEC getting a fifth team in there?
So I think on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably go like an 8 for 4, and I'd probably go like a 5 out of 10 for 5. To go back to something I mentioned, this is tough in the preseason. I see a lot of teams that are going to be sitting there at 9-3. And so if you start kind of doing the math on and W's and L's, and you start looking and you go, well, there might be a 9-3 team that is that last at large team. Are you going to go with a Florida with a tough schedule, or maybe like a Big 12 team that's got a pretty weak schedule comparative? So I would put it as about like 50-50, 5 out of 10. But I feel pretty confident in 4 almost to go to that 8 out of 10 number.
Okay, and then let's break down, of course, the rest of the bowl games. I'm going to run through all these real quick. Liberty Bowl, Steven's got Auburn and Kansas. So, hey, congratulations, Hugh. You met your preseason goal to make a postseason. Shout out, Hugh. Mayo Bowl, he's got Tennessee and SMU. I saw someone in the comments saying Shane's going to get a Mayo bath, I guess, which that checks out. A ReliaQuest Bowl, South Carolina, Indiana. That would have been one heck of a matchup last year. We'll see this year. Citrus Bowl, Florida and Michigan, two huge brands right there. Independence Bowl, Vanderbilt, and Oregon State. So Steve's got the Commodores going back to a bowl game. Love to see that. Music City Bowl, Ole Miss and Nebraska. Lane Kiffin will be down on Broadway before and after the game, if I had to guess. Gator Bowl, A&M, Georgia Tech, the Haynes King Bowl right there. That'd be fun. Texas Bowl, Oklahoma, Iowa State, Birmingham Bowl, Arkansas, South Florida, and then finally the Gasparilla Bowl, Mizzou, NC State. So, man, we got quite a few teams going to projected at least to make a bowl game. How close was, who do we not have here? Kentucky, Mississippi State. How close were those to making the list?
I think they're a good distance off. I especially Mississippi State, just given the schedule and given their roster situation, I think it's a lot harder of a climb. Kentucky a little bit closer, Mike, but I think when you look at that non-conference schedule, the fact that they play Louisville, I think Louisville's better this year. And also they got a tricky game against Toledo to start the season. So their math in the non-conference, you know, you may need four or five, you know, depending on the math, you know, wins outside of those non-conference games to get to a bowl game. So I think it's going to be tough for Kentucky. I think their odds are better though than Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, any of these matchups, when you're doing them at all, I mean, I know you're kind of like just projecting postseason or anything, but are you projecting at all like, man, I'd love to see Florida and Michigan or South Carolina, Indiana? Are there any that you're like, man, I've set this up just for the matchup?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, one of the things that you have to keep in mind when doing this is there are kind of a few parameters. You know, the playoff is going to make its first picks. Then you get into the bowl order in the SEC, and the Citrus Bowl has first pick. So you try to go with like, okay, what's the most attractive matchup that you can? So you set up a Florida DJ Lagway against Michigan's good defense, and I'm sitting at home thinking, man, I would be watching this on the edge of my seat. And then you start kind of working your way down because there's like a group of six bowl games, and then the Birmingham and Gasparilla Bowl has the final picks in the conference. So you kind of work your way down, but you're also taking into account that you have to think about what's on the other side, because I almost ended up with Missouri and Kansas playing in the Liberty Bowl. Of course, they play this year, so that wouldn't be the best matchup in for a rematch. So you're trying to create the best possible matchups, and you get new teams, new locations, maybe some offense versus some defense. If I had to pick one that I was really super interested in, it might be that Music City Bowl with Ole Miss and Nebraska. That, talk about the folks in Nashville would have like an immediate sellout there with those two fan bases.
Right. And then, this may be going a step too in depth here, but are there any games, regular season games, SEC, where we're sitting here saying, okay, we've got our four teams projected to make the college football playoff, but maybe there's a game or two out there that if it goes the other way, just as an example, let's say South Carolina hosting Alabama, that I'm sure if we were to predict that today, you would probably pick Alabama to win, as would I. That's not like a bold take. But what I'm saying is, what if that game were to flip and South Carolina wins it? Could they be making the college football playoff instead of Alabama? And it doesn't have to be that game, but if there's any other, Tennessee, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, I mean, so many different, Ole Miss, LSU. Are there any games that if maybe they break the other way, even if it's slightly upset, that you could see a team make the college football playoff that you don't have listed here? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That's a great question, because there are a handful of games that I would say like you've put them into the toss-up category. And one of those is definitely a non-conference game with Miami hosting Florida. Like early in the season, I think trying to figure out how healthy is DJ Lagway. Also that LSU game early in the season, I think loom very large for Florida and how the season could go, but also could shape the playoffs. So I think those two early season games for Florida. I also would have that Ole Miss South Carolina game circled. because that looks like to me two teams that are going to be outside the top four in the projections. Is one good enough to be that fifth SEC team? Probably the winner of that game. You kind of knock out one of your contenders. I think that game looms large. Also, what about Texas A&M and Notre Dame? Because we start thinking about like who could be that fifth SEC team to make the playoff. If A&M goes on the road and gets revenge for last year, they've got to play LSU. They've got to play Florida. They've got to play Texas. They've got a hard schedule, but you got to find an upset somewhere. I think if you're A&M to get to the playoff, if they can go on the road and beat Notre Dame, I think we're talking about a much different story for Texas A&M and its playoff hopes come December.
Mm-hmm. And then let me stick on that theme, Stephen. What about LSU? You have projected there as a playoff team. What happens if they lose the opener? Would you still project? Again, that's got nothing to do with the SEC standings, but if LSU loses the opener once again, would you, what's your confidence that they can rebound and make the college football playoff? Would you possibly insert someone else if that happens again?
I would probably pick Clemson right now if you asked me to pick the winner of that game. We know LSU's had a lot of troubles in the first game, but also just, I think, going on the road, new offensive line, tough place to play, Clemson's defensive front. I would lean Clemson in that opener. So I actually think that if they win that game, their odds are going to go up significantly. I think if they lose that game, it doesn't really impact how I feel about their playoff hopes, unless there are some major personnel flaws that show up in that game, like maybe offensive line woes that are just going to be hard to overcome. Defense doesn't look a lot better. So I'm really not putting too much stock into that opener for Clemson and its playoff hopes. It could matter for seeding potentially, but I think more of those SEC games to me are going to be more telling.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, hey, final thing, because we know the obvious one, I was going to ask, who are you most confident making the playoff? And we know what you think of Arch and Sark and all that. So, well, I'm not even going to ask that, but which one? And you said you're high on Bama too. So if let's just say one of these four do not make the playoff, Texas, Georgia, LSU, Alabama, for any reason, you know, whether it be injury, whether it be maybe you just lose a couple, one possession games and the ball bounces the wrong way. Which team would surprise you the least, I guess is what I'm trying to ask, if they fail to make the playoff this season, Texas, Georgia, LSU, or Alabama?
I think it would be LSU. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it feels like just from like it's hard to doubt Kirby Smart. I think Georgia will figure the personnel things out. Texas, you know, I think is probably the best team in college football. So it comes down to Alabama, LSU. Alabama host LSU. That's a pretty big check in their column. But also, I just think like Alabama feels like a quarterback away from potentially playing for the national championship. If that hits, they're going to be in contention to win it all. I got more questions about LSU because you got to look at the offensive line. You go to like, is the defense going to take a step forward? It feels like there are more questions there. And to go back to the schedule, you start with Clemson on the road. You still have Florida at Ole Miss, South Carolina, Texas A&M, the Alabama game at Oklahoma. The losses could start adding up. I know LSU is all in. They've been one of the biggest winners of the offseason, but that schedule combined with the personnel concerns, I think they would be the team that I'm the least confident in the making the playoff.
What record would Missouri need to get to make the playoff, you think, with their schedule set up the way it is? And heck, if they just win, you know, if they just take care of the games at home, I think they're going to be favored in maybe not favored in all the road games, but favored in at least half of them. How many wins does Missouri need to get to reach that playoff threshold?
I think 10 victories, because I think if you give Missouri 10 victories, I think you assume that they lose one of those games on the road, and there's no bad team on those road games, whether that's Auburn or Vanderbilt or Oklahoma or Arkansas. I could see them, you know, pulling off an upset against South Carolina or Alabama. So if you split those two and beat Texas A&M and you're sitting there at 10-2 with a couple top 25 victories, I think that's good enough to get them in the playoff. If they get to 11-1, they're definitely going to be in. I think they would be safe at 10-2. I don't know that 9-3 would be good enough for them, though.
All right, and then final one, same question, Ole Miss. Again, their schedule sets up well in terms of home games and maybe even the road games, aside from Athens. We'll have to see. I'm very high on Oklahoma, but you told me by October 25th, the Sooners have imploded. I mean, I would buy that as well. You know what I mean? So what records Ole Miss need to get into that playoff conversation?
I would probably go 10-2 as well, only because that was the cutoff last year. We know they fell just short at 9-3. Their schedule does allow them a little bit more, I think, wiggle room than Missouri, just because you're going to play potentially the best team in the American in Tulane in non-conference play. Tulane could be ranked. You also get LSU, Georgia, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Florida. All those teams could be ranked this year. So I still go 10-2 just because that's been our default. Their schedule, if things happen around them, I could see 9-3 getting them in the conversation to be in, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. All right, any other thoughts, Stephen, on the bowl projections before we move on to some hypothetical SEC trades?
Mike, I think there'd be a lot of matchups to get excited about there. You mentioned the Mayo Bowl. I think we could work out, because we got to work out Cousin Shane to be the mascot. I will tell you, I am secretly wishing that North Carolina is the other team on there, just to see Bill Belichick get dunked in some Mayo, or to see how he can work his way out of it. But there, that would be, if these bowl matchups come true, I think the SEC has a lot of good matchups, but also a lot of favorable matchups to potentially rack up a lot of wins in the postseason.
Yeah, and I'll just ask you quickly, because obviously I don't really care too much about, well, really any team outside of the SEC. But since you mentioned Belichick, I know he's like a hot button thing. Again, feel free to be as brief as you want on this. But as I understand it, North Carolina's got a pretty favorable schedule. Would it be a stunner? I'm not saying like playoff or anything. I think that'd be crazy. But would it be a stunner if they do have like just a solid season?
I think they should have a solid season given their schedule. I think Clemson is going to be the only ranked team that they're going to play this year. So it's pretty favorable. They get TCU in the opener. So I think the over-under is hovering around like around 7 or 8 wins. I think largely my prediction of them to finish like middle of the pack in the ACC is based on schedule and not necessarily on personnel. So, you know, if things break right, I could see them in the Mayo Bowl racking up 8-9 victories.
Well, I'm glad we don't have to witness that team play. We watch real teams like the Aggies.
Aggies.
Steven, shout out Cousin Rick. He just gave us $100. Aggies beat Notre Dame on the road, go 10-2 to be one of the 5 to reach the playoffs. Beat the hell out of Notre Dame. Enjoy media days. Thank you, Cousin Rick.
It's Texas A&M's biggest fan, Cousin Rick. Gig'em, Aggies.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. Hey, so since he donated, let's look at that again real quick. And I know you highlighted the Notre Dame as Cousin Rick did, and we hope that they smash Notre Dame, because who cares about them? But other games that will be, obviously Texas will be huge, but I really have my sights set on 2 games. Steven, you tell me if I'm wrong here. Florida at home, because I think Florida's going to be much improved. At LSU, that'll be monstrous. If A&M, if I could guarantee you that we're beating Texas at home and at LSU, if you're guaranteeing me that, I think I would guarantee you that A&M is going to the college football playoff, because the only other potential losses at Texas, at Notre Dame, at Missouri, South Carolina. If we're beating Florida and at LSU, I think we're good enough to go 2-2 against Missouri, South Carolina, Notre Dame, and Texas. What's your thoughts on that statement?
Yeah, I agree with that. That's exactly where I was going, because often when I look at the schedules in the preseason, I'm breaking my W's. Like, these are the guaranteed victories, I think. These are the losses, and these are the swing games. And I think when you look at Texas A&M's schedule, you start that first month, that road game at Notre Dame, toss-up. You go October, you've got Florida, LSU, and then you get November with South Carolina. I would put the game against Texas, like, I think that's probably, most people would pick Texas to win this preseason. So you put that in the loss column. So I think if you can go on the road and beat Notre Dame, you're beating South Carolina and you're beating Florida. And so even if you lose to LSU, you're right there. You're right there at 10-2. And that's kind of when I look at A&M's schedule, I just see they need to pick off one of those games, whether it's a Notre Dame or an LSU on the road. You've got two mulligans. And I think if you're kind of banking on trying to get to the playoff, beating Florida and beating South Carolina is not only good for your resume, you're probably battling those two teams for a spot in the playoff or maybe even a spot in the SEC championship, depending on how the tiebreakers work. So winning those swing games is huge for those, but it also knocks them out of the way. And you could pick off a swing game. You're right there in the mix to make the playoff. So I totally agree with what you're getting at there.
And I totally agree, Stephen, with Doug Bunch, who just became a member. Doug, welcome to the family.
Welcome to the family.
We appreciate you, buddy. Thank you for supporting the channel. Means a lot. All right, Stephen, time. We can delay no longer. SEC trades. Maybe first of all, maybe we can delay a little bit longer. Can you quickly get into what made you want to go down this route and thoughts on your trades that we're about to show here?
Absolutely. So I always think this exercise would have been a little bit easier, you know, if we go back a couple of years when there wasn't so much transfer portal movement, because teams do make a lot of roster acquisitions now. And so it was more of your roster's pretty set. What could you do? But I'm always fascinated around like the baseball trade deadline, NBA or NFL. And you see so many teams take a swing, like we have a need here. How can we fill it? And what do we have to give up? So I just love the idea of like roster management, movement, and how do you improve teams? And we don't have that in college football for the most part, you know, except if you want to count like UCLA and Tennessee trading quarterbacks this offseason. But I just thought it would be an interesting way, like how if trades were allowed and you had a few guiding principles about how trades have to work, what could you do? This is just kind of a fun offseason hypothetical, I think.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the first one. This is a Steven proposed trade, and I'll veto it if I think it's unfair. So let's break it down, Steven. LSU would be involved in a trade. Brian Kelly, Josh Heupel gets on the phone. And here's what Tennessee's going to get a quarterback. I like that. Michael Van Buren. Receiver Nick Anderson. This is looking pretty good here, Steven. Defensive back PJ Woodham, but they're giving up one of the best corners in the country. Jermod McCoy would go to LSU. So a 3-for-1 here. And Steven notes, well, this is assuming, of course, Jermod McCoy is healthy. He did tear his ACL in early January, so he is currently on the mend trying to recover here. But I think I'm going to allow this one, Steven, because, again, this LSU, they used to be DBU. Now they're DBU. They don't have much of elite defensive back, so they clearly need they could use a corner. Michael Van Buren, I think he'd start at Tennessee, and Nick Anderson would start as well. So, I don't know. I kind of like this one.
It's an interesting deal. I think the couple things I kind of toyed around with these trades is I'm only thinking about 2025. I'm not really thinking about long-term 2026 or 27. But I do think there is something to be said that you can make a trade and have controllable assets for the future. And so Michael Van Buren is a quarterback that has a couple years of eligibility. And on the other end, LSU is weighing, we probably only get McCoy for one season. And we're also assuming he's 100%. So you're taking those two things into account while also trying to say, how do you make both teams better? And if you're LSU, sure, you got, you know, Delaney, you got DJ Pickett, but McCoy is a day one upgrade at corner. And for Tennessee, you'd be getting an upgrade at quarterback, and you'd get a big time playmaker at receiver. You can also throw in a defensive back to help offset the loss of McCoy. So LSU would be giving up a lot. But also, when you're trying to go all in and make the playoff, you've got to go get those big time playmakers or players like McCoy.
Okay, this one I will sign off on. Good job, Steven. Trade number two. Auburn shipping off receiver Malcolm Simmons, very talented player. Uh-oh, what are they getting? They're sending him to Kentucky. Kentucky's trading back Jamarion Wilcox, outstanding running back. The Hughes Freeze will not utilize for some reason. And a defensive end, Josiah Hayes. So here's another one, Stephen, where I like this one as well. And I think this one would hold up.
I was this deal done on the golf course between these two coaches at their offseason? I think this trade makes a lot of sense for both teams. Like, Kentucky needs playmakers at receiver. Auburn, I like their running backs. I think, you know, between Alston and Darrell Robinson and some of the freshmen, they could probably get enough production, but you'd be getting a freshman in Wilcox, or a running back off his freshman season with some controllable years, who gives you some depth. And you also throw in Hayes, who can help you on the defensive line, add some depth to the interior. So I think both teams win here. I think it makes a lot of sense for both parties.
All right, how about this one, Stephen? A&M and Oklahoma getting in on the trade here. A&M would get defensive lineman Dominique Williams from Oklahoma, but they're sending over a boatload of players here. Oklahoma would get cornerback Des Ricks, defensive lineman Tyler ODM. I'm sure I butchered that. Tight end Theo Melon Ofstrom. Butchered that one too. And a freshman to be named later. So quite a few players getting sent to Norman. Man, I'm going to have to know who that player to be named later is, Stephen, before. Otherwise, I may have to veto this one.
This one's hard because Oklahoma has an asset that a lot of teams don't, which is defensive tackle depth. And if you have an active trade deadline in the SEC, like, you could ship one of those tackles out, because I've got three of them on my all SEC team. So they have like a position of need for a lot of teams. So how do you get the most out of that? And I think in this return, you would be getting a corner in Des Ricks with some upside, also controllable years. You get a defensive lineman who has played a lot at Iowa State, who can step in. He's played some end, he's played some tackle, and you get a tight end. That's a position that Oklahoma was looking to upgrade this offseason. So I think this deal, if I was Oklahoma, I'm not sure I would accept this one. I think if I'm A&M, I would hit the yes button as fast as I could.
Well, I think Steven is just trying to trade Dominique Williams. So, again, I screwed it up. It says defensive back, should say defensive lineman. Georgia, though, this time getting Dominique Williams. And Oklahoma would get tight end Lawson Lucky, receiver Noah Thomas, defensive tackle Xavier McLeod, and cornerback Daniel Harris. Now, this one I love, Steven. I think Oklahoma would do this in a heartbeat.
I think so, too. And I think both teams benefit because, you know, kind of, again, if you're looking at Oklahoma, you're getting a tight end and a receiver to fix a position that was a major position of concern last year and need in the offseason. And you throw in help at defensive tackle to McLeod, doesn't necessarily replace Williams. And you also get Daniel Harris, who also has some years of eligibility, fills a need at corner. So I think if I'm Georgia, this helps a lot too, because you could use another defensive tackle. You could use some beef up front. He's certainly not Jalen Carter, but you could use somebody like this to help your front. So I think this trade makes a lot of sense. I think if I'm Oklahoma, I like this deal a lot better than the A&M one.
Hey, something I didn't even think about. Cousin Todd says, well, NIL costs should be included.
Yeah.
But if only we do that, but you know, all that's kind of hidden cloak and dagger type deal, but that would seriously complicate all these matters. Who's making what, and especially if you sign someone to a huge deal and they're not panning out, buddy, you'd want to trade them in a heartbeat. You know what?
Yeah, and here's another angle to this. What if you were a new coach and you tore the team down to the studs, and you basically said, anybody that's got something signed beyond this year, I want out. I want to have the most salary cap money I could. And you just went 2-10, didn't care. And you just signed and you went out and traded for salary, if you could do that. And also traded for like freshmen and sophomores that have multiple years of eligibility. And then you could see what they got. And then you could flip them if they're any good to get even more controllable assets. So there's a lot of different angles. I think you could take the salary and the years of eligibility.
Right. And here's another way you could take it, Stephen. You could become a member just like Tanner Frey. Tanner, welcome to the family.
Welcome to the family.
We appreciate you, buddy. Thank you for supporting the channel and helping us this football season. We couldn't do it without you. I'm seeing some dogs are not happy with that trade. I think it's a great trade for Oklahoma. I don't know if Georgia wants it though.
I don't know. If I'm Georgia, though, you're giving up some depth at tight end and receiver, and you're giving up a backup defensive lineman and maybe a corner who will start for a guy who could be a difference maker, a defensive tackle.
Right.
I think I would take that deal if I was Kirby Smart. I know you're giving up a lot, but again, trying to win this year.
Hey, shout out Cousin Tanner. He says, thanks, fellas. Been listening to the show for about 2 years. Great job, cousins. Keep up the good work. By far, my favorite podcast. And he's shouting, he's a big Razorback. So we appreciate you, Cousin Tanner. All right, so now I think those are all the graphics I have for Steven's trades, if I'm not mistaken. No, wait, there's one more here. This is another Steven trade here. Bama would ship defensive back Cam Calhoun to Mississippi State. Mississippi State would ship back Albert Reese. Ooh, I don't know, Steven. I think Bama would have to give up a little bit more. So I'm going to have to veto this one just because the offensive linemen are just so hard to come by. But what made you think of this trade?
I think it's kind of a position of need for both teams. If you're Mississippi State, filling out some cornerback spots has been a priority this offseason. I still think it's a question mark. So you'd be getting a guy who was a pretty good player for Utah last season, probably on a lot of other teams he would be starting. And I think for Alabama, getting somebody at tackle who could maybe help push Formby or, you know, kind of be ready to transition to the freshman class they have coming in. So it was really about trying to fill two different, you know, needs for both teams and also maybe two players who could take on bigger roles for their new respective teams.
Okay, now that I have that additional information, it makes a lot more sense.
So we're going to prove it. Okay.
No, I'm still vetoing it, but I'm not vetoing the legend, JR. He's back. He's done it again.
Legend, Cousin JR has done it again.
He's gifted a membership, Steven. I got to look up, see who he's gifted it to, but it looks like Kenny Davis. Kenny, welcome to the family.
Memberships in this podcast are brought to you in part by Cousin JR.
Yes, Emily says, is it even that SEC podcast without JR? It is not. I'm not going to ring the bell, but we do got our, I don't know if I've showed you this yet, Steve. We got our JR cowbell back here. So we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much.
Man, Mike, I have not seen that. And man, the cousins are unbelievable on this show. So it's great to be a small part of the family here.
Absolutely. All right. Now we're getting to, now these are the fun trades, Steven. Yours are sensible. There's thoughts put into them. Mine are just kind of wacky over the top. But how about this? This is a big one here. I'm high on Talen Green. Georgia, Kirby gives him a call down there. Kirby and Sam Pittman, they go way back, right? So, you know, I think they could work something out here. Georgia, they got to go all in, trying to win the national championship while this window's open. Give us Talen Green. We want him. We have Talen Green. We're going to win the national championship, we feel like. But we got to give him something back. We got to obviously give Gunnar Stockton because Arkansas is going to need a quarterback that is ready to play. They need help with some pass catchers. Give me Lawson Lucky. Very, very underrated tight end, and then KJ Bolden, All-American defensive back. You know, that's a lot to give up. But if Talen Green is as good as I think he is, I think this is a trade both sides would make and one that would really push Georgia over the edge.
I think I would approve this one, Mike. I at first I thought, man, that's a lot to give up for Talen Green. But if he is as good as you're projecting, having a top five season, Georgia immediately has its answer at quarterback. There's no is what's how good is Gunnar Stockton going to be this year? You've got a guy who could be top five or six in the conference. And sure, you're giving up a lot, but I think the biggest loss in all this would be KJ Bolden, because if you're Georgia, you're looking at this going, okay, we're trading starting quarterback for starting quarterback. And then Lawson Lucky, you have Oscar Delp. So you're fine there. Bolden is the biggest loss, but that is a major position of need for Arkansas. And he's also got multiple years of eligibility. So I think this makes a ton of sense, and I would approve this deal.
Okay. You know what else makes a lot of sense? Steven up. Steven up. He's back. He's gifted a membership. Oh, he's got his own jingle now, too.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven up.
Shout out, Tide. Shout out, Steven up. He's gifted a membership to Matt Steele. Matt, welcome to the family, courtesy of Steven up. Not Steven Lassen, who's also awesome, but Steven up. Big Bammer, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much. And I think we always joke that, you know, it's these cousins, Steven, that their teams are basically dominating the rest of us. They are more willing to donate to us poors down here, just getting destroyed by Georgia and Bama and the likes, and even Cousin Rick. I think he's having a good laugh at all the wins A&M's gotten over the rest of us.
Man, I think if you're just a cousin or a subscriber of the show, aren't you like undefeated? Like it's like the world's greatest SEC show multiple times during the week. So, I don't know, Mike. I mean, the cousins just come through every night. We're sitting here talking about trades, and here they are delivering again. What a great community of people to be around.
It's Cousin JR says we got to veto this one. He says it's one-sided loss for Georgia. I don't know. I think he's underrating Talen Green because I think if he's at Georgia, I think he's just winning the Heisman. That's the caliber I think Talen Green could be. So, but if JR says no, then we gotta veto it.
If the Talen Green that played last year, and of course he was hurt for a good chunk of the season, I don't know. I think if you're projecting him to be a top five quarterback in the SEC, I think that makes the deal quite a bit different.
Right. I know it's a lot to give up for Georgia, but if I were to tell you that Talen Green, a healthy Talen Green, was at Georgia right now, well, you're probably the wrong person to ask because I know how you feel about Arch in Texas. But if Georgia had Talen Green, would you consider flipping Georgia and Texas?
I would definitely close the gap. Like I think I've got him 1-4 in my power rankings. I would probably make him 1-2.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Here's another one, Steven. A&M, South Carolina.
Oh, man.
A&M's getting Dylan Stewart. They need a pass rusher. They lost all their linemen, elite linemen in the NFL. Now he's a hell of a player, right? So I tried to look at it. I was like, well, they're going to have to give up a lot. Cassius Howell, he's no Dylan Stewart, but he's a very good player. They're singing his praises in College Station that he's going to be the next great defensive lineman. We'll see. Torian York, one of the best linebackers. South Carolina has lost all their linebackers. And they also lost all their interior offensive linemen. So A&M, arguably their best interior offensive lineman, Trey Zun. So maybe two all SEC caliber players, but you're getting an All-American in return. Thoughts on this trade?
Man, Mike, this is a blockbuster. My first thought is this makes a ton of sense for Texas A&M to get somebody like Dylan Stewart. I think if I'm South Carolina, I would probably hold out for one more piece in all this. I'm not sure what that piece would be. Maybe it's a receiver. Texas A&M probably doesn't really want to give up some receivers, but can you get maybe another piece in the deal because you're giving up maybe the best defensive player in the SEC this year and potentially again in 2026? That feels relatively.
What if I sweeten the pot with Terry Bussey?
I think I would approve that trade.
Okay.
Yeah. You get, I think you look at this, like if you're South Carolina, like you're getting a defensive end to replace Stewart and Howell, I think is on the verge of a breakout season. Throw in Torian York, who immediately makes their second level better. Like it's almost like, do you think higher of South Carolina if they've upgraded at a few spots? I think I probably would. I think that answers some questions. Now you're giving up a lot, but you're getting quite a bit back, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Hey, how about Cousin Sven coming through with some, I think these are Euros, Steven, 2 Euros, which is probably like 80 American at this point. Arch Manning for Nussmeier, how about that? You're asking the wrong man. I don't think Steven would trade Arch for Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Aaron Rodgers. You know what?
Man, I was thinking like Joe Burrow, you know, like I was trading like Arch Manning and Joe Burrow, you know.
All right, how about this one? I think every Auburn fan would make this trade. Gus Malzahn for Hugh Freeze, plus a 1-year free golf at the Tallahassee Country Club. I have no clue what it's called, but I mean, who wouldn't make this trade at this point in time?
Oh man, I'm totally caught off guard by the scene. You phrase the golf club. I can keep it together here. Yes, if I'm an Auburn fan, I'm taking that deal, aren't you? I mean, at least Gus can beat Alabama, right? So,
right.
So I would take that deal if I'm
Auburn. All right. Well, I did all these graphics just for this one. So, yeah, I can't. This is the winner, I think.
That's the winner. I have to admit, I am totally caught off guard by that because I'm expecting like another player trade to see Gus and Hugh Freeze on the screen. Well done, my friend. That's a good trade.
And then, so Steven said he came in last minute. You've got some other trades, right? That could you share those with us? That we don't have a graphic for any of these, though.
Yeah, not as good as that Hugh Freeze and Gus Malzahn graphic. How about this one? LSU trades Harold Perkins to Georgia for Ernest Green.
Yeah. Now, where are we putting Harold Perkins on Georgia? Is that up to Kirby to decide where to put him?
Yeah, I think my thought on this one is I'm Kirby Smart, and I am one of the best defensive coaches in college football. I can find a way to make it work. And if it's just making him get after the quarterback 15 times a game, Ernest Green's an offensive tackle. It's hard to lose him. I can find a chess piece. I need to get some outside edge help this offseason. You know, they brought in Madozi from Army. Here's a chance to bring in Harold Perkins, and they can find a way to use him, basically.
Yeah, no, I like that. I would, I may have to get another offensive lineman body, though, from LSU just to make it even. But yeah, I like where your head's at. That's a solid trade, I think.
Yeah, I think I would approve that if I was the commissioner of the SEC. It seems fair for both teams.
Shout out real quick, Steven Chance. He just gave us $10. We appreciate you. Heck no, Dylan Stewart ain't going anywhere. $10 veto. So he's gave us $10. So we're vetoing it officially. We get on them 8-4 boys. And of course, that's the ultimate A&M troll. So we appreciate your input, Chance, and we will veto that trade immediately.
What about this trade for South Carolina? South Carolina gives up cornerback Jalen Kilgore. They ship him to Texas for Ethan Burke, Travis Shaw, two defensive linemen. And Sarkisian says, you can have your pick of X amount of freshmen. Like you can take, we'll give you a pool of like five. You can pick one from there. So Texas gets another defensive back basically to help replace Jade Barron. South Carolina gets two defensive linemen and gets one or two controllable assets from its Texas freshman class.
Like any freshman they want?
I think I would say like a pool of like five or six. Like, so you're not getting like the top of the top.
We're getting Justice Terry.
Yeah, he's not involved in this deal.
Okay. that's an interesting one as well. Yeah, it's pretty wild to see where you go with these trades. You're trying to make these make sense. Meanwhile, I'm just trying to troll everybody. But I think all the cousins hate it, though. They're all saying no. Nobody wants to give up their guy. That's the problem. Nobody sees the good in the other players because their players are all good. All the rest suck. You know what?
You have to give up something to get something to get better. Like it sucks to like give up. I mean, trust me, funny story is, you know, the Steelers made the trade for Jalen Ramsey last week and I was on cloud nine for like 15 minutes. And then I realized, oh, they're trading Minka Fitzpatrick too. So that's you have to give up something to get something. So, I get you, cousins, but, it takes two to tango on these trades.
All right. You got any others?
Oh, I got some gems here. What about Georgia calls up Vanderbilt and says, what about Randon Fontenette? You interested in trading him? And we'll give you Zachariah Branch. Straight up one for one.
That's interesting. If I'm Vanderbilt, I request London Humphrey. He's got to come back just to make it official. If we could throw him in, I would say yes.
I think this, I would probably do this if I was both teams, but yeah, I think if I'm Vanderbilt, maybe you request another receiver, give yourself a little bit more firepower too.
Yeah, no, I like where your head's at though.
Here's another one. Speaking of comebacks, So Georgia couldn't get the deal done for Harold Perkins, so they call up Missouri, and they say, what about Damon Wilson or Darius Smith? Do they want to come back to Athens? So Missouri gets Colby Young or another Georgia receiver, and they get to pick one of Georgia's edge rushers, and Georgia trades an offensive lineman to be named later for either Darius Smith or Damon Wilson, with Colby Young or another receiver as the centerpiece of this deal.
Would it be weird? This is so weird how you're doing it. Like, players are leaving Georgia. They're probably getting more money, you know, obviously. And then Georgia saying, no. We're going to trade. We need you back. Come on.
Right.
These players would be vetoing this. This would be a hard pass on all these.
Yeah, that's one of those NIL contracts. You definitely would want to get a no trade clause written in there. What do you think? Would you approve that deal if you were SEC commissioner?
If I was a commissioner, yes. But I think if I'm Missouri, I think I would actually say no, because I think those guys are going to be paramount to their defense this year.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think that's enough. Like, Colby Young, I think, can be a good receiver, but I also think that there is some risk there. And also, if you're just getting back a couple of guys who might be projects in terms of development, I don't know that's enough to give up maybe a potentially a difference maker at edge. So I would probably pass if I was Missouri.
And I also think, I know there was like legal issues as well, but I think that was a big part of Georgia bringing Noah Thomas. I think they knew that, you know, he's a similar player to Colby Young. And I think he's an even better player. So he's almost I don't want to say a guaranteed backup or anything. I don't know. I'm just saying I think they scanned the field and said, let's get a better version of this guy on the team. Yeah. And thankfully for them, they got, you know, the more weapons, the better. It's certainly not something bad to have. But if Georgia's already upgrading over him, yeah, I don't think I'm taking him.
Georgia, if there was a trade deadline in the SEC, they would have some pieces to move at receiver and tight end if they wanted to maybe shop for some help at corner or edge rusher or somewhere else. So,
right. You got any others?
Oh, Mike, I got a few blockbusters here. This one might make Cousin Shane throw his computer out the window, or might make him celebrate. What about Tennessee trading Joshua Josephs to South Carolina for Nick Harbor?
Oh, no, I think Shane would do that in a heartbeat.
Big just play so weapon.
He could play with him on the video game and just run go routes nonstop. But I'm trying to think. I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting. I know South Carolina fans really like Nick Harbor, but if they're not happy with that, I don't think they realize how good Joshua Josephs is. So I think that's a fair trade on both accounts.
I think if I'm South Carolina, I would do that deal. I know the upside of Harbor is significant, but you need help for Dylan Stewart. Like, this is assuming that you didn't make the trade to Texas A&M. But also, I think you could basically go all in on just like Brian Rowe and some of your other Mazio Bennett, some of your other receivers. But this would alleviate some of the pressure on Stewart, so that you're allowing your best player to not be like double teamed and triple teamed the whole game.
Right. No, I think that's a good one.
How about Texas A&M calling up Arkansas and saying, what would it take for us to get Taylen Green? I started with Marcel Reed, Cassius Howe, and Mark Nabu, the center.
I think Arkansas would say no to that.
What if they threw in Reuben Owens?
Come on down. Now, maybe that's how you get him. Yeah. But now maybe we're sleeping on Marcel Reed. He could be a breakout star as well. But I don't hate that one. And particularly if you're getting a quarterback back, if you're Arkansas, then I kind of like that.
A&M's given up a lot there, but I think it also, if you're projecting like kind of like you are with Taylen Green to be a top five quarterback in the SEC, and he is that good, and that sort of checks off one of those question marks for Texas A&M this preseason. You've upgraded at receiver. All of a sudden, your offense is going to be significantly better. That gives you a much better chance to go on the road and win those Notre Dame to maybe beat Texas. So I think having a for sure answer at quarterback is pretty valuable, and they would get that here. I don't think they as good as I think Reuben Owens can be, giving up some depth at running back. It's not like the end of the world there. I think the concerns would be to lose the starting center and to potentially lose the starting defensive end. That's a lot to give up. And especially if you feel good about Marcel Reed's development too.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, Taylen Green's running for his life again, just like he was in Fayetteville.
Yeah. I think Taylen Green would be a heck of a fit in that Colin Klein offense. Like watching Kansas State's offenses under Colin Klein, I think he'd be a perfect fit for it.
Because of Rick's veto. See, nobody wants to get rid of their guys.
I got one more blockbuster, I think, here for us, Mike. What about Auburn gets help at linebacker? They get TJ Daugherty from Ole Miss. Ole Miss gets its pick. They get one corner. They get Jay Crawford or they get Kayan Lee. So they get one of the younger corners from Auburn in exchange for help at linebacker.
Hmm. Yeah, that's not a bad one. I think it... I would think both teams would make that trade.
I was trying to weigh for Auburn, what's the bigger need, like defensive tackle or linebacker? They did pick up a linebacker from Maryland in the spring. The other part of this is everybody, if this was a real exercise, might be looking for help at defensive tackle. So, you know, guys like Demonic Williams would be very, very valuable and command a high price. So I thought, if I'm Auburn, I look around and shop and say, the price is just too high. So we go and get help at linebacker and solidify that second level. And that's kind of why this makes sense. Ole Miss needs help in the secondary. Auburn could use some help with that linebacker or interior defensive line.
Hey, shout out to Cousin Kenny Davis. How about Billy Napier for Shane Beamer? Would they make... Would either one... I don't know that... I think Florida would be fleecing South Carolina if it came to this. Do you think that's a fair trade?
I don't think so. I think if I'm South Carolina, I want to keep Shane Beamer, right?
Right. So let me ask this. Let's do coaches real quick. Would anybody trade for Mark Stoops? I mean, A&M nearly got him.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. What... I bet Mississippi State would trade with for Mark Stoops. What do you think about that?
He'd be an upgrade over Lebby. Yeah. The only thing is, and I, it's almost like thinking ahead a little bit, like would his style fit well at Mississippi State? I don't know that it necessarily would. Like, I like the idea of Mississippi State doing something different with Jeff Lebby. The other thing is, like, did just Mark Stoops just like lose his fastball and they're not going to go be able to get back to that level of being a pretty consistent bowl team. Does that make sense?
No, it does. How about Sarkisian for Kirby Smart? I don't think Georgia would make that trade. But what's your thoughts?
I don't think Georgia would. If Georgia wanted to trade Kirby Smart, you would have to get an insane return. If I think he's the best coach in college football, I don't know what the return on that would be. Like, X amount of $1 million in NIL space, a couple high profile players, and a Sarkisian back. That seems like what it would take to get somebody like that. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I would. What about this one? Brian Kelly for Josh Heupel.
Hmm. Man, that's a tough one. I feel like I remember, like, I could go back to like when Brian Kelly was the head coach at Cincinnati and feel like I remembered several rumors connecting him to the Tennessee job at one point. Does either party really feel happy about it after, I guess?
I don't think Tennessee fans would feel too happy with that. I was trying to think of who would take on Brian Kelly. I was going to say Billy Napier, but again, I don't think LSU would take Billy Napier.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Would anybody take Billy Napier? Auburn? What about Auburn?
I think I would if I was Auburn, wouldn't you?
At this point, yes. And then Florida would be upset about having Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, they could buy out Hugh Freeze after the deal.
All right, hey, I think so. We've officially run out of trade options. I think now we're just getting crazy with it. You got anything else, Stephen, before we end this one?
Mike, I think that is all. I have exhausted all of my SEC trade deadline proposals. So fun to dream a bit. I will always plug the magazine, AthlonSports.com. Magazine's at the very top. It's on newsstands and it's in our online store. Shout out to all the cousins because the SEC East magazine is sold out online. So keeping up with all those Big Ten guys and buying up all those magazines too. So thank you.
Absolutely. All right. So that's going to do it for this episode. Cousin Shane will be back on the next. We got a couple more team previews to get to before we get to SEC Media Days. This time is next week. We'll be down there. So, yeah, we'll catch you all tomorrow. We appreciate you and have a good one. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.